The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We've had plenty of talking heads on the show, on the station today. The Minister for Finance, Jack Chambers, as well, was with me. But those of you listening last week would have heard me asking for people to get in touch, people who listen to this show, people who might reflect kind of what everybody else is thinking and talking about out there on Budget Day. So thank you to everybody who did. We were inundated with messages, and thank you to those of you who have been able to join me today. Matthew Murphy, Tracy Carroll, Barbara Taylor, you're all very, very welcome to studio. Barbara, if I can start with yourself. So what is your situation?
Well, I'm renting in Kildare. I've been renting for a number of years now. And I suppose today I was looking at the relief for renters, and it just seems, I think overall, it's a little bit for everybody, but it just all feels very band-aid like. You know, it doesn't feel like it's anything amazing from the point of view of the housing market. I just feel there could be a lot more substance. You know, I mean, I feel like it's a bit like, you know, in the last even local elections, if you looked at some of the leaflets that came through your door, if you covered the party involved, pretty much everyone says the same thing. Infrastructure, housing. It's a bit like Miss World when they want world peace. That's all lovely, but how are you actually going to do it, you know? And it kind of reminds me, I grew up in Tipperary and I grew up in a pub, and we used to have a little plaque on the wall that said, "Talking never brought home the turf." So I'd like to see, when they're talking about housing, it's all about supply and demand. It's great that you're giving us a bit of a tax credit, probably about less than a month's rent for some people. But how are you actually going to get the supply increased? The government themselves are huge renters. The amount of money that they're spending on rent is actually going nowhere. I'd love to see somewhere where we look at the solutions and not the problems. I was listening to your show yesterday talking about, you know, Alan Kelly talking about, you know, the modular homes back in 2015.
2015, yeah.
500 homes. And then I looked at Project 2040, and it says in Project 2040 we're going to have an additional 1 million people in Ireland. That's 16 years away. If we couldn't build 500 houses in 10 years, how are we going to house an additional million people in the next 16 years? And I'd love to see somewhere where, again, looking at supply and demand, we keep saying, oh, we lost all the people during the crash. We lost all of our construction staff. What are we doing to actually train more people? There's people coming into the country looking for a new life. Could we not be training them in some way in trades? I had a look at Solus today, which is meant to be like, I remember back in the day, I'm old enough to remember the ANCO schemes, when people learned trades. They became stonemasons, they became carpenters, they became joiners. And I looked on that website today, there's not a single course from the government that's in any way related to the housing and the construction side of things. So I'm kind of wondering, how are you actually going to do it? And from my point of view, what I'd love to see with all this money coming in, all these billions, it's wonderful. It's a bit like the Late Late Show. There's one for everyone in the audience. You're not really sure how good the prize is, but you're getting something. And, you know, it's kind of like, I'd love there to be a little bit more flesh on the bones. And I'd love someone to say, by this year, we're going to have, of the 10,000 houses that they're proposing today, we're going to have 1,000 houses here, 1,000 houses there. By next year, we're going to have this many of the 10,000 built. By the following year, we're going to do this. A bit more flesh on the bones, and give people a bit of, you know, a sense of, again, listen to your show yesterday on the HSE. And this is me kind of talking about infrastructure as well as housing, talking about centres of excellence. Can we just do a centre of good first? And do that really well.
Yeah.
And then move up. It's kind of like, do good, better, do better, best, in the old kind of St. Jerome saying. That's what I would love us to see more of. A bit more flesh on the bones.
Matthew, housing, I assume, is probably high up your priority agenda as well, is it?
Yes, and I think myself and other students will be disappointed by the provisions in this budget for housing. As long as I've been alive, my ambitions have never extended to owning a home in Ireland. And I'm in, I think, quite privileged position. I don't have to rent now. I can live at home and commute to my university. But it's just, it's not something that I think is seen as very realistic to almost any students. So it's like you're saying, people are leaving. We have a real brain drain in this country. I know second year nursing students who are getting emails with offers from Australian university hospitals, and they're offering them more money than they make here in a decade as soon as they graduate. And on top of that, they can own a home in Australia. There's not as much of a housing crisis there. So it's just, there's a real sense of apathy, I think, and frustration maybe. Actually, something that caught my eye when I was reading on, I think, the Irish Times there, they mentioned that Pascal Donoghue, this is his ninth budget. So 9 years is almost half my life. So almost as long as I've been alive.
Thanks, Matthew.
Yeah. Almost as long as I've been alive.
It's longer than I've been working here, but anyway.
Yeah, well, but it's been the same crowd and the same budget. And it was remarked on last year, and I think not much has changed, that it's a very, very samey budget for the last decade.
Yeah.
There's a few, there's tinkering here, 1% off USC here, whatever. But there's not, I think, they're not addressing a lot of the systemic issues which exist.
Without expecting you to kind of be an economist, like what would you have liked to have seen today? What announcement or what measure made you think, finally they've actually listened to what we're saying to them?
Well, I think for me, on the housing front, and something that I've been saying since the last budget at least, was that they focus, I think, too much on the demand side. So they it's a very good thing, of course, to be giving, for example, the rent tax credit has increased. And it's a very good thing to be helping out people who are renting. But the issue in Ireland is supply. We just don't have enough homes to go around. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, and I know they have increased, I think, the tax on vacant homes, but if they could figure out some other way of incentivizing multinationals to rent out homes, or if they could build more. I know they're building, I think, 10,000 new social homes, yeah, which is good. But there's clearly something that the last 10 budgets haven't addressed on the supply side of housing. I'm sorry, I don't have an exact policy for you.
It's a good example. Exactly, and it echoes something actually Danny McConnell was saying earlier of the Business Post. He was on with Andrea and Joe and how he described it just lacking of ambition when it came to housing. That's a little bits and pieces.
There's no urgency. You know, it's like, where is the, you know, it's that kick, it's a little bit kick the can down the road. You know, where is the urgency in getting this done? Like, we were just saying beforehand, if you look at what happened during the pandemic, when a situation was forced upon the government, they had to put in place a plan of structures, admin, getting people vaccinated. If we could just put an intense 2 year, 5 year plan of building, like as if you won the right to have the Olympics in your city, you'd have to kind of suddenly all of a sudden build infrastructure and do it in a turnaround way, whether that's bringing people in from other countries to do it and using that this apple, you know, that's fallen from the tree literally,
yeah,
to actually spend it on something really significant and impactful.
Tracy Carroll with us as well. And Tracy, you and I have spoken many times, and often the context is Willow, your daughter, and you're a full-time carer and homeowner. So what stood out for you in today's budget, or what was lacking?
I suppose, to be honest with you, I kind of felt very flat after it. Okay, so for carers, Family Carers Ireland has put in their call for change in the budget. And in fairness to Minister Humphreys, the majority of those were met. But in the grand scale of you know, living with disability in your home or children with additional needs, it's just a drop in the ocean. All the pressure comes from the lack of resources, supports, education. We had announcements around education. Again, it very much mirrored last year's, and it doesn't change the situation. 77% of parents, they did a survey in Inclusion Ireland, felt that last year's announcement would make no change in the education system, and we're back here again. Extra SNAs, special education teachers. But what I didn't hear was an actual real look at reforming the education model. We're not building on, and Pascal actually said that in his announcement, we want Ireland to be the best place for every child.
Yeah, if I you're heard typical, him say that.
If you're typical, if you're anyway neurodivergent or have additional needs, we talk about, you know, cost of living crisis. As soon as you have a child with an education need or disability, you're in crisis from that moment on, and it doesn't change. And the extra expense around living with disabilities, I think it averages around €248 a week in a household. None of those measures are being met. And then the burden of trying to get your child into an education system that is completely dysfunctional and doesn't offer inclusion. So again, we're othered. So it's back to, you know, SNAs, special education teachers. If we're not investing in changing the education model and putting the investment in teaching teachers how to educate diversity, then what are we doing? We're failing our kids constantly. And if we're trying to, you know, build a society where every child fits and our children have a future to look forward to, then we need to start investing in education and doing it right. So we need to shift from the model that we're in now and afford every child an equitable, equal place in education. And we're not doing it.
And what's the barrier to that? Because you've kind of long campaigned and you've spoken at this show and elsewhere about these type of things. Mm. And is your sense that just the will isn't there, or that the will maybe to pick a fight with kind of vested interest isn't there, that maybe people just disagree with you? What is it?
I don't see anyone really standing up and saying, OK, we're going to lead to change. I want someone who's going to stand up in government and say, I am going to lead. I'm not going to be led by the past and just follow on. I want someone to stand up and say, no, we're going to change the system. And I don't hear that. We're still very focused on this education model that's been running for how long? You know, it's still the same that it was when I was in school. And, you know, children should all be afforded a place in school. There's a little girl, Chloe, who's 7 years of age, sitting at home today, who ran out of her school on her own on Friday because she came so challenged by the environment that she was in. And she left the school by herself and ran home to her own house. And she's now at home another day because the school don't know how to support her or aren't willing to work around supporting her. We're putting all this burden on the kids and expecting them to fit that education model when we're supposed to be supporting children in education. So we need investment in change, and we need the government to stand up and say, you know what, we're going to work on developing an inclusive, diverse education. And that doesn't just go to children with educational needs or disabilities. That's, you know, different ethnic minorities, you know, people coming in from other countries, traveller community. We're not developing education where every child can actually afford that place.
This is a kind of a point. It came up yesterday and it came up earlier today as well. You kind of worry what economic situation or conditions have to prevail for us to do that type of thing. Like if having a 25 billion euro surplus, you know, following an 8 billion euro surplus, following, I don't know what it was the year before, it'll be several billion euro again next year. You know, like that there's the economy is kind of at capacity, and with that comes challenges. But at the same time, we're loaded. We are. There's no other way to describe it. And I know not everybody is, and there's a cost of living crisis, absolutely. And it's much more acute in some households than others. But like as a society, as from an exchequer point of view, we're loaded.
And you wonder, where's the forward planning?
Yes.
Like, you know, we're talking about building all these extra schools and putting in these extra classes. Is there forward planning in that to actually really build inclusion? You've seen our little school in a really small community, 144 classes, and what they've done there. And around that, we brought the community together. So if we want to shape society to be inclusive where everyone fits, we have to forward plan and stop, you know, just adding another layer, investing in SNAs and, you know, just throwing the same money time and time again. We're never going to bring change. There's so many kids sitting at home today, and kids that you would expect to be able to work in schools. I see Noah sometimes really challenged, and he would be expected to fit the mainstream education model. Mm. But we're not investing in really reshaping education. And this is where our next leaders are coming from.
A budget for the future is how Jack Chambers described it earlier, Barbara. I mean, do you get that sense of forward plan, that there's a vision for what Ireland should look like, be it the education system, the housing model, whatever it happens to be, that, you know, that we should be aspiring to in 5 or 10 or 15 years, and this budget is working towards it?
I just feel that, like, we're loaded now, but we might be loaded tomorrow, you know? And I worry sometimes the way we spend money, because, look, we're given the same people who don't spend very well at the moment, we're giving them a massive amount of money to go, now go off now and spend that really well. And do we trust that that's going to happen? I don't want to see us at a tribunal in another couple of years looking back going, God, remember we had all that money and we blew it. And we spent it on bits of everything and not much of something. You know, I just worry that there isn't a real... There's a plan, but I feel the plan keeps getting moved. You know, we're talking about the next 5-10 years. Can we get a little bit more business-like about it? We're a country, a 100-year-old country. We've produced some of the best businesses in the world, the best business brains in the world. Yet our government, our politicians might have ideas and aspirations, things that they want to do, but it falls dead when it goes through a department who have a budget, and then they go, yeah, we'll just do what we've always done, and we'll spend the way we've always spent. And you know, if we look at all the things recently that are obvious to us as the public because they're tangible, for example, bike sheds. You know, like bike sheds have been around for years and they didn't cost 235,000. But these are things that are the tangible things we can see. I worry about the intangible. I worry about when you're not spending money that's coming out of your own pocket. It's very easy to be flahoolock with it. You're not really accountable. You're not, your job's not on the line if you don't spend it well. And dare I say it, I worked for a very famous airline many years ago, and I sat in front of a very famous CEO who I don't think you probably have to think about who that might be.
Yeah.
And I had pens on my desk, and he would come out to me and he would say, "Why do you have three pens on your desk? You don't need three pens. If you needed stationery, you had to go up to a cupboard, sign a requisition." That's a man who learned the value of a pen to a plane. And that's why you have a massive, fantastic airline in our country that's making money. Okay, love them or loathe them. But a little bit of that kind of mentality when it comes to government spending wouldn't go astray.
Listen, we're tight on time. I could kind of keep this going for an awful long time yet, but we can't. Matthew, can I just quickly put something to you that Tanya Ward from the Children's Rights Alliance brought up earlier, and I wonder what you have a view on it. She said 16 and 17-year-olds being allowed to vote might make a difference in terms of future planning.
Yeah, and since I was 16 or 17, I've advocated
all those years ago.
Yeah, many, many years ago. I think I understand, sort of from an adult's perspective, being wary of giving that power to 16 and 17-year-olds who aren't necessarily fully developed yet and certainly haven't seen very much of the world. I would say I've seen 40 and 50-year-olds who aren't very developed yet and haven't seen very much of the world. So I think there's a lot of research in Scotland, I think, certainly for their national level of elections, 16 and 17 year olds can vote. And there's a lot of research that later in life leads to higher rates of voting. I think young people are particularly bad for voting, which is maybe why we're not so well represented in budgets. So I think it comes down to you're at home, your parents go with you to sign up to vote. Whereas when you're a bit older, maybe you've slipped through the net, you never sign up to vote and you never will vote then.
But I think youth's voice is so important and our children's voice is so important and we're not listening to them.
Mm-hmm. Matthew Murphy, Tracy Carroll, Barbara Taylor, listen, thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
Really mean it. Thanks, Mel.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.